This is the Building Resilience Podcast, episode 215, The Power of Belief, Understanding Placebo and Nocebo Effects. Welcome to Building Resilience, a podcast where theory, practical strategies, and inspiring stories show you how to unlock your best life. I'm your host, Leah Davidson. As a certified life coach, speech-language pathologist, and nervous system resilience expert, it is my mission to teach you how to be more resilient to life's adversities. I will show you how to manage your mind, befriend your nervous system, process your emotions, and even eliminate stress. It's time to do more than just survive. It's time to thrive. Let's get started. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Building Resilience Podcast. Today, we are diving into something that I like to call belief in action. We're going to be talking about something that you might have heard about, placebo effect, but you may not have heard about the other thing we're going to be talking about, the nocebo effect. So we'll start off with some very basic definitions. The placebo effect is really when somebody experiences real improvement in their health or in their symptoms because they believe in the treatment, even if that treatment is inactive. So it's really the power of positive expectancy. So your beliefs can literally change your biology. And the placebo effect isn't just about feeling better. It's actually about your brain creating real and measurable changes in your body. But there is also the other side, the flip side, where negative expectations can lead to real physical or emotional symptoms as well. So you can think of this as kind of like a self-sabotage that can be triggered by fear or doubt, and this is called the nocebo effect. Now, understanding both of these effects gives us really a powerful framework and a window into how our brains and our minds shape our physical reality. So here's an example. You go to the doctor and they tell you that this new pill is a miracle cure. Now, even if that pill is just a sugar tablet, many people will actually feel better simply because they believe that it will work. So this is placebo in action. Now, let's say you hear that that same pill may cause nausea. Well, guess what? A lot of people will start feeling queasy, even if there's no active ingredient that's causing it, and that's the nocebo effect. The placebo effect is when people experience real changes like healing or reduced symptoms just because they believe in the treatment, even if the treatment doesn't have any active ingredients. It's such a powerful thing that there's clinical trials now that compare drugs against placebos to ensure that the results come from the drug itself and not just the belief. And there's a bunch of studies that show the power of placebo and nocebo. The placebo effect is a very well-studied phenomenon. Now, studies show that up to half of the benefits from certain treatments, like antidepressants even, are due to placebo effect. And the effect isn't just limited to pills or procedures. It is triggered by expectations and even symbols. For example, people can be exposed to fake poison ivy and develop real rashes. And people could take fake caffeine and it would improve their motor skills and their heart rate. Even things like the presence of a doctor, so they call that the white coat effect, can change a physiological response. Even reframing pain, like we've talked about in the past on this podcast, as something that is non-threatening can really help with pain management. So all these studies point to an immense psychological influence that we have over our health. How we think about things truly, truly matters. I'll give you a couple of more examples. And I've shared some of these examples before on the podcast. I just think they're so good. I want to repeat them. A lot of them are from the work of Aaliyah Crumb. She's one of the researchers, has done a lot of work around the power of mindset, the power of what you believe, the power of what the placebo has. So she did a study back in 2007 called the Housekeeper Study. And she studied, along with her colleagues, 84 hotel housekeepers across 7 different hotels. Now, despite these housekeepers doing very physically demanding work, being on their feet all day, using lots of muscles, lots of calories, lots of energy, lots of steps, many of the housekeepers, when they asked if they get regular exercise, they said no. They didn't see their jobs as exercise. So what Crum did with her colleagues is they wondered what would happen if they helped them change their mindset. So they took these women, they divided them into two groups, and they measured them on a variety of things that included things like their weight, their blood pressure, their body fat, and their overall satisfaction with their job. And then they took them, and to half of them, they gave them a very simple 15-minute presentation, which basically said, you know, your work is great exercise. It satisfies the minimum requirements for exercise, and you should be able to expect to receive benefits from that type of exercise. They didn't do anything with the other group. Now, they all came back about 4 weeks later. They measured them again on all those same factors that they had measured earlier for the baseline. Not surprisingly, the groups that didn't receive this information, nothing changed. But what was interesting is those that did receive that 15-minute presentation, they had changes. They dropped weight. They had a significant reduction in their blood pressure. They dropped body fat, and they even reported liking their job more. So it was really fascinating that as a result of 15 minutes presentation, the whole game changed for them. And it produced this cascade of effects on both their health and their well-being overall without changing their behavior. So what they ended up seeing, a conclusion from this study, a person's expectations influences what the outcome is going to be. So the effect that you expect is the effect that you will get. Now, she did another study, and they did it with some colleagues at Yale, and it was called the milkshake study. So they made this big batch of milkshakes, and then they invited people to come to the lab to try the milkshakes. And while they were drinking the shakes, they had them hooked up to an IV so they could get blood samples and measure ghrelin, which is a peptide secreted in the gut, which is often called the hunger hormone. So participants came in, they hooked them up to the IV, and then they were given a milkshake. They called it a Sensi shake, the first one. 0% fat, 140 calories, no added sugar. So it was really a guilt-free satisfaction. They drank the shake. And in response, their ghrelin levels dropped, but only very slightly, signaling to the brain that some food had been consumed, but not a whole lot. A week later, they invited them to come back to the lab. They hooked them up to an IV again and did all the same measurements, and they gave them a shake. This time, 620 calories, 30 grams of fat, 56 grams of sugar. So this is kind of the decadence that you would think you would deserve. And in response to this shake, their ghrelin levels dropped again, but this time at a significantly steeper rate, about three times more than the shake that they had before. Now, this would make total sense to any metabolic nutritionist who understood that a drop in ghrelin is proportional to the amount of calories consumed. But there was a catch in this study. Even though the participants thought they had consumed a sensible shake and an indulgent decadent shake, in reality, they were given the exact same shake. So just as in the case with the housekeepers, that same amount of exercise produced more or less of a benefit depending on how it was construed, here again, the mindset proved to matter. In this situation, suggesting that it's not just calories in and calories out, or the precise makeup of fats and nutrients, but what we believe, what we expect, what we think about the foods that we eat determines our body's response. So those are just two studies she's done that really showed the impact of mindset. So your mindset really matters. And there's other studies that have been done. There's something called the knee surgery revelation. And this was a groundbreaking study where researchers compared real knee surgeries with sham procedures, where the doctors only made incisions without performing actual surgery. Now, surprisingly, both groups reported similar levels of pain relief, which demonstrated the powerful role of the belief in the medical outcome. Patients who believed in a fake knee surgery reported real pain relief and healing. Now, there's something else that's interesting, and it's called the open label placebos. A professor at Harvard, Dr. Ted Kapchuk, he has studied placebos for more than 20 years, and he talks about something called these open label placebos. Now, in one study, he looked at people with irritable bowel syndrome, IBS, a common condition that causes abdominal cramping and diarrhea or constipation, and it can be really debilitating for many. In fact, I struggled with it tremendously all throughout my 20s. Much, much better now, thank goodness, because I have learned about regulating my nervous system, and I have learned all about chronic stress, chronic illness, and the things that I could do for myself, working around mindset and safety. Now, half of the study that they looked at with these people with IBS, they were told they were getting an open label placebo, and others got nothing at all. And what he found was that there was a dramatic and significant improvement in the placebo group's IBS symptoms, even though they were explicitly told they were getting this open label, a sugar pill placebo without any active medication. So even when people knew they were taking a placebo, they still experienced significant symptom improvement. So this actually suggests that deception, deceiving people into believing that they're getting something, isn't even necessary for the placebo effect to work. Now, obviously, as Kapchuk says, placebos, they're not going to work for every medical situation, but they can work for some conditions which are more defined as self-observation symptoms like pain, nausea, or fatigue. So people still can get a placebo response even though they know they're on a placebo. So why does this placebo effect work? And there's a few reasons. When you have a belief, you have positive expectations. Your brain releases dopamine and endorphins. Your immune system can function more effectively when you have this positive expectation belief. Your stress hormones decrease, and actually your pain perception can significantly diminish. Now, the same is true for when there are negative expectations. If you have negative expectations, your stress hormones can surge, your inflammation can increase, your pain sensitivity can be heightened, and your physical symptoms can manifest simply from pure expectation. So what can we do with this information? Why is it helpful for us to know? Why did I do a whole podcast about it? Well, I know that when I have been working over the years with my SLP clients, regardless of their traumatic brain injury, the level of their traumatic brain injury, I often tell them about the placebo and nocebo because I know, and I knew this, I saw this clinically, even before I was reading all the literature and the research, I just saw what I saw. When my clients believed they would get better and focused on their gains, they would see improvements. More so than if they believed that they weren't going to get better. It really influenced how they showed up overall in our therapy. And this is truly a form of positive expectancy. And positive expectancy in therapy world is this idea that therapy will help. It's a belief that therapy will help. And it really plays a significant role in achieving successful outcomes. Now, they say that expecting progress really does release feel-good neurochemicals like dopamine, which can help boost up emotional and physical recovery and enhance your healing. This positive expectancy, it also increases engagement. Clients who believe in the process are more likely to fully commit to therapy techniques and strategies. And of course, this positive expectancy, it strengthens the relationships. And we also know that trust in therapy fosters a very strong client-therapist bond, which is a key factor in success. And studies show that the relationship between a client and a therapist is even more important than the technique used. And then this positive expectancy, it reduces resistance. This positive belief lowers the chance of self-sabotage and encourages people to persevere through their challenges. So overall, it really helps reduce resistance. And lastly, positive expectancy kind of builds momentum. Like hope, it amplifies the impact that you're going to feel, all these small wins, and you keep having these small wins, and this reinforces confidence, and that reinforces motivation, which continues to push you to continue to progress. And so there is this momentum. Now, by cultivating this hope and belief in therapy, clients set the stage for deeper healing and more meaningful change. Now, that's great when we're talking about things like therapy. But what do we do? How do we harness the effect of placebo or pushback on nocebo in our daily lives? Well, the research again shows different ways we can do this. It comes down to our mindset. Now, Kelly McGonigal, who I've talked about before on the podcast, she wrote a book called The Upside of Stress. And she also has a really, really good TED Talk that you might want to go look at. Her research showed that simply viewing stress in our everyday lives as harmful is going to impact us more. When we view stress as helpful rather than harmful, it can transform the physical impact on your body. So she outlines that there's two mindsets. The first mindset is, she calls it just mindset one, where you experience stress as debilitating. It depletes my health and vitality. You believe that it debilitates your performance and productivity. You think it inhibits your learning and growth. And so overall, stress, negative, should be avoided. Well, mindset number two is one where actually stress, I believe, enhances my performance and productivity. It helps me improve my health and vitality. It facilitates my learning and growth, and the effects of stress are positive and we should be using them more. So McGonigal said that in her research, the majority of the participants, they agreed with statements under mindset number one. So just ask yourself, which one do you agree with? Basically, it means that the majority of people hold a negative perception of stress. But when people viewed that mindset number two, had that view that stress was enhancing, she said that people are more likely to view stressful situations as a challenge and not an overwhelming problem. They then have greater confidence in their ability to cope with challenges. They're better able to find meaning in difficult circumstances. So mindset number two, clearly the one we want to work towards. Now, there is also power in rituals. Rituals have an incredible power to boost your health and your overall well-being. And studies on these open label placebos, where people know that they're taking a placebo, shows that it's not just what you do, but how you do that matters. So the simple act of creating consistent routines, like how you take your vitamins or how you start your day, actually sends a signal to your brain that amplifies the benefits. So this is because the rituals align your actions with your expectations, activating a whole bunch of neural pathways that can help reduce stress and improve focus and support our healing. So when we create rituals, we want to try to be consistent, treating everyday habits as intentional rituals. So going for a walk or journaling or eating mindfully. We want to trust the process, believing that the routines you create will make a difference, sort of that positive expectancy of routines. And of course, we want to add positivity. We want to infuse our rituals with like positive affirmations or really positive thoughts that help strengthen the impact. Because rituals, they're not simply habits. They're a way for us to engage your mind and your body and really turn small actions into powerful tools for mental health. So we have our mindset matters. We have rituals that matter. And the third thing is perception that matters. What the housekeeper study actually taught us is that reframing daily activities, just reframing of them, can have real physical benefits. And this is something that we can all do. How you view your daily activities can really transform them from like everyday things into health boosting activities. Research shows that the reframing of simple tasks, even things like cleaning or gardening, as exercise can actually lead to real physical benefits. So gardening can become strength training, where you're digging and you're pulling weeds and lifting pots. That's going to be building your muscle and endurance. Cleaning is a form of cardio, vacuuming or scrubbing floors. It is really aerobic workout. Even taking the stairs can become like a high intensity training where there's like a quick, powerful burst for your heart and your legs. Now, by shifting your mindset, these tasks will stop feeling like chores and start serving as intentional ways to take care of your health. So this simple reframe really taps into your mind-body connection, which really takes ordinary things and makes them a little bit more extraordinary. And then finally, your environment can really greatly influence your mindset as well as your biological responses. By intentionally shaping the space that you're in, you can reinforce positive expectations and promote well-being. Now, research does show that your environment significantly impacts your expectations, and we know your expectations are influenced, your biological response can get influenced. So we want to create spaces that will reinforce positive expectations. So doing things like having visual reminders of like photos or objects that symbolize past achievements to help boost your confidence, or even creating an environment in your home as like a dedicated wellness space, somewhere where you can go to journal or to exercise to help you create consistent habits and focus. Or incorporate nature into things where you're adding like plants or landscape artwork or nature photos in your house. Affirmations is another thing that you can do, putting sticky notes around your house or quotes that really encourage confidence and resilience and self-belief. Decluttering is another way that we can really promote a nice environment that is good for our mindset, and having different sensory cues, soothing music, soothing lights, relaxing sense. These are all things that can help create an environment that invites in growth, because your environment supports your mind and your body, making it easier. All these things help support the placebo, the mindset, the belief in action. Now let's talk quickly about nocebo. Now, nocebo is where these negative beliefs or expectations cause real symptoms and can undermine your well-being. How do you stay away from them? Well, the first thing you can do is watch your language. We just talked about that not so long ago on the podcast. We want to use empowering language. So even speaking about your health or your stress in ways that promote hope and strength, rephrasing things like I'm broken with I'm healing. The next thing you can do to challenge the nocebo is to challenge negative predictions. Watch out for thoughts that you might have, like I'll never get better, and reframe them to focus on these are the steps that I am taking to improve. We also want to limit the focus that you have on your symptoms. So avoiding information and symptoms, talking about them, thinking about them, that amplifies fear or anxiety. We want to try to focus on things that are more balanced. I talk about having equal airtime. Yes, if you're going to think or talk about your symptoms, make sure you balance it out with other things that are more neutral, if not positive. You also want to highlight resilience. You want to reflect on your past recoveries or reflect on your past challenges that you have overcome and remind yourself of your mind and body strength. And lastly, you do want to surround yourself with some type of positivity, optimism. Seek out stories and communities and resources that really emphasize growth and hope and healing. It really is all about focusing on resilience, staying mindful of your thoughts, managing what you consume, giving equal airtime to both the good and the bad, and even the neutral. Because the research is clear. Our beliefs and expectations, very powerful forces, they can create real biological changes in our bodies. Whether that be through the placebo or the nocebo effects, what we believe about our health can really become our reality. I hope you found that helpful, and I will see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Building Resilience Podcast. If you're interested in learning a little bit more about managing stress, building resilience, and leading a more purposeful life, then make sure we're connected on Instagram and Facebook at Leah Davidson Life Coaching. You can also subscribe to my weekly newsletter at www.leahdavidsonlifecoaching.com/newsletter. Looking forward to connecting.